Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to another edition of the NOAA Rundown. I am your host, the partially inebriated Jordan Grove, and with me, as always, we have the forever contrarian Will Osgood.
What a compliment. Thank you.
Way not to be contrarian. I applaud your efforts. And we have the indecisively, is he drunk, is he not, Jason Bernos as well. See? So, we got a lot of topics to go over tonight. And I just briefly sent the outline. So, we've had about 3 minutes to familiarize ourselves with what we're going to talk about. But first and foremost, we have the NBA draft lottery coming up. Or the draft. Not the draft lottery, but the NBA draft coming up. And I don't know about y'all. I know, Will, you seem to be really pumped up. Jason, you're not as pumped, but you're getting that way. I am on the ground sweeping when it comes to the NBA draft because the Pelicans have the 51st pick, and that's a pick that they've tried to give away twice and wound up with it again. It's like playing Secret Santa, and you keep having your gift stolen from you. And you finally take it back at the end of the night. And you're like, I didn't really want this, but great, I have it again. So, Will, you're the one that's been foaming at the mouth, that's really been amped, like you're on amped as F from those Robert Frank YouTube videos. Like, you're banging yourself in the head with the NBA draft. Like, what?
Yeah.
Who do you think's going number one, man? I think really that is the question on everyone's mind right now. Who does Will think is going number one?
Well, and as usual, there's a guy that I think will go number one, and there's a guy I think should go number one, and that seems to be the case. And pretty much, it's bad. Well, that's often the case when I do my NFL draft scouting and mock drafts and all that, and so. That's always a tough question, but everything that I'm hearing and everything that seems to be the scuttlebutt is that DeAndre Ayton's going to go number one. The guy who I'm convinced, though, is a superstar and should go number one is Luka Doncic. But it sounds like he's going to fall to at least two. He might even fall further than that. It's hard to say for sure, but... That's what it's sounding like.
Jason, you buying in the Luka Doncic hype?
I'm finding that I'm still flabbergasted that Will used the word scalebus.
It's a good one. It's a good one to use.
This is a good one. I think they'll buy the first round pick. And by when I say buy, I mean he's using either Solomon Hill or the 24 to get something like the 19th pick. Was that Miami that has like four in the top 30? Four?
Yeah. Philadelphia's got four like in the top.
Yeah, where you can get maybe like just that. Maybe you can get a starting three. Maybe you can get something that falls there. There's some interesting players in those late teens, early 20s, that kind of get me, you know.
You like Dante DiVincenzo?
Yeah. That's a high-energy player that would be great on your bench.
I mean, I don't really know where he'd fit in. I wouldn't trade one of your established vets for that. I'd try to just straight up buy a pick if you were going to get a high energy guy. But
like, yeah. Grayson Allen?
No, I mean, Grayson Allen. I'd say the kid from Nova is more high energy than Grayson Allen. Allen is more cerebral, and he's a guy.
I mean, depends on what kind of energy you're looking for.
Right.
But I would think if you're getting Allen, you're getting somebody who's more of a scorer than DiVincenzo. I don't know how to say his name, but
hey, you nailed it. You nailed it.
Yeah, but the Nova guys reminds me a lot of Dellavedova. Probably not supremely talented like any the lottery picks in this draft, but he'll probably carve off, about 10 years in the league, and he'll be a valuable bench player.
Yeah, I can see that. So, here's the thing with the Pelicans, though. Like, I think you nailed it, Jason. Like, absolutely. If you can find a way to get someone to take Solomon Hill's contract, and if you can get a pick for it, like, heck, if you can get a second-round pick for that, like, you do it, you know? I think same thing with if you can find someone to take the DeJunta contract, like, you do it. I don't care if it's for the last pick in the draft. You do it, you know? Is that going to happen? Probably not. Yeah, and then I don't know. I'm not – for me, like, unless Miles Bridges were to fall to kind of what you said, like 19 or something, like, I'm not that wild on trading up – trying to trade up into the first round unless it's into the lottery. But that's probably going to cost too much. So, yeah, from a Pelicans perspective, it's probably – this draft isn't looking great. They're probably going to have to do something – in free agency or, in a trade. But that brings up the question, like, is there anything that the Pelicans can do in the draft? Not necessarily even with drafting a player, but is there anything they can do with trades or whatever to improve their team? What do y'all think?
Tomorrow night, they'll be involved in at least one trade.
I don't – as Dem sees this team as it is right now, how he's constructed it, and I'm telling you, they're going to try hard to keep looking. He's going for that ring, so he's going to try any which way he can either to clear some space or get another asset to add into another trade here or there. But I don't think I'm just sitting back there waiting for number 51 to roll around.
Yeah, he's kind of like Mickey Loomis from that perspective, huh?
But you know what? I'm just thinking about this. It's maddening how the two New Orleans teams have entirely different draft reasonings. Like it, the same. Will constantly trade up and just give up assets. The Pelicans do it too. But they give up assets without trading up or getting any real value besides established vets who they'll probably get a few, a year and a half or whatever out of.
But they never go up to get talent. The Saints always go up to get talent and just waste assets. You see, it's the Pelicans have always, even before Dems, have always just traded those first round picks away for veterans. Like the only time they ever kept it was for Davis and Austin Rivers, it seems. Or Cedric Simmons and whoever else, Hilton Armstrong. Jeez. So
Austin Rivers is making money. That's crazy.
Anyways.
That's great.
What do you think, Beaker?
Yeah. I agree with you. They haven't really been too high on drafting prospects. And I think a lot of it is because they haven't done a very good job of it. You know, I mean, Anthony Davis falls in your lap because you get the number one pick, and that was an obvious one. And there may have been some finagling of the ping pong balls for that lottery. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I would love to see them tomorrow make a move, like to get way up into the top of the draft. Because I do think there's some real high-end talent in the first 5 to 6 picks. But, yeah, I mean, there's no track record of them doing that, and I'm not sure they have the assets to do it.
Yeah, I think I saw somewhere that they have like $2.6 million to spend for the draft. And to me, that sounds like you can get like a low first-round pick. Now, I don't know what the low picks are going for, but
big boy from Chalmette.
Yeah, they could. Looking over a few things here, there's some players that I saw that kind of intrigued me just doing this, just brief studying here of NBA draft prospects. Guys that I like seem to be Aaron Holiday, who's a point guard from UCLA, Kyrie Thomas,
yeah,
shooting guard from Creighton, and Gary Trent Jr., the shooting guard from Duke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, and so all the guys you named, though, are guards. And that is, you know, like, if the Pelicans were gonna address, like, do you all agree? Like, we are at the point, or the Pelicans are at the point where they really are looking for a fit and a need. And we've talked about this already, and we'll talk about it more, you know, when we do our, you know, off-season free agency preview. But like, that need is pretty clearly small forward, right? Or it's, you know, it's that
mm-hmm.
wing. Like, that's pretty clear. So yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any reason to go after a guy like at a late first round pick if he's just going to play a guard spot.
But you know what?
Unless
Kyle Kuzma came in the late 20s this past year.
Who's that?
So you can get Kyle Kuzma. So you can get a starter in the late 20s.
Now, a guy that I really like, too, from reading about him. Now, I mean, he got a green room invite, so people think he's going to go in the top 20. But if he falls to early 20s or something, is Jerome Robinson. He's a 6'6 shooting guard from Boston College. Like, if there's a guard that they can get that can just shoot the lights out, get him and then just plug him in. You know,
he can play three.
You can't have enough shooters on the floor. I think we've seen that with Golden State and with Houston.
Right. I definitely agree with that. Definitely agree with that.
Another name is the kid from Texas Tech, freshman. He's like a 2-3 combo, more 3, but he can fill the bucket up too, man. And he rose up. He didn't come into Texas Tech as a one and done. He had a breakout season, and you know now it's kind of like what Trey Young did. Like, nobody
mm-hmm.
thought Trey Young was going to be a one-and-done and just, like, went ridiculous. But the Nets want to trade picks or trade anything. They can trade RHJ, just saying.
Yeah, we're going to discuss that next week. That's going to be our, like, huge NBA blowout extravaganza next week. We've been talking a lot in the chat about off-season moves that the Pelicans can make, and even talking about just in general NBA moves, like Dwight Howard being sent to the Nets for Timofey Mozgov, which is just nuts to think about. But you see the chess pieces starting to move, and and seeing teams that are in sell mood that you didn't think would be, like the Charlotte Hornets. So you kind of wonder, all right, well, if they're taking on Timothy Mozgov's awful salary, who is also like not a great player, and you're getting rid of Dwight Howard, who is a really damn good double-double machine still, would they like the scrap heap of Solomon Hill for maybe a Kemba Walker? You know, like,
fun fact is that the same GM that gave Mozgov that terrible contract is Charlotte's new GM that acquired him.
Yep.
Oh, Kupchak.
Yeah, Mitch Kupchak. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yep. So he can't get enough of that Mozgov, you know what I'm saying?
I agree with you though, Jordan. Like that was we're blowing this thing up move. That wasn't so much to get Mozgov in particular, I don't think. That was, we're blowing this thing up because it's not working, which is why, I think Kemba Walker. Yeah, Kemba is on the trade block then. Like, I'm 99% sure of it.
And possibly even MKG, which MKG hasn't really turned into the score that his potential might have indicated. Always had trouble with his shot, but the dude is a hellacious defender.
Yeah.
And I feel like the Pelicans could do a lot worse than taking on MKG and getting rid of Solo Hill. It also might be trading a similar player.
Yeah. But tell me MKG wouldn't make the Pelicans better, because he can lock up. I mean, he is a great defender, or at least a really good defender. I mean, he could do a good job on, you know, the Kawhis and you know, other small forwards throughout the league that we would face. You know, he could at least make Durant work for, you know, workforce points. So tell me that wouldn't make the Pelicans better. Because we don't have a problem scoring. You know, like, scoring's not the problem. And obviously,
you need three good scorers on your team, at least.
Yeah.
You would like to have four, but you can get a win. You need three. The Pelicans have Drew and AD. They need one more. Solomon Hill is not a scorer. MKG.
We have four.
Who? Well, yeah, we got Miritich.
AD. Drew. Nico can put 20 up a season if you wanted to put him in the lineup, if you wanted to start him.
Yep.
And
yep.
Boogie, if you resign him, which they're going to resign him.
Forget about Boogie. He's not going to be with the Pelicans next year.
Looking at the salaries here of Solo Hill and MKG, which the NBA is kind of weird in the fact that you almost have to have the salaries match up. The Pelicans would be taking on salary if they traded for MKG.
Oh, really?
Yes. Solo's got three years.
Why do y'all want MKG?
Because according to the ESPN trade machine, he gives us plus two wins.
He can't score.
Well, I mean,
I'm literally a better scorer than him. Like literally a better scorer than him.
He could score in the Pelican system. Charlotte had like the most anemic offensive system in the NBA last year and the last couple of years.
Are we just signing all AD's buddies, hoping that like he'll stay in New Orleans or something?
Hey, I'm good
all
with that.
All his college buddies.
I'm good with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not? If he wants to be an assistant head coach.
Just for the fans.
Yeah, why not?
Alone. He won't come down here. He's so sad. He don't want to come down here. He got all Kentucky people. Got Rondo. Got DeMarcus. Got AD. Got Darius. How many more Wildcats you need down here? Damn it! Come on.
I know. So the thing. So say you trade for Kemba Walker. Like, you're gonna have to see if you want to bring Rondo back. You're gonna have to get him on like a. Huh?
He went to Utah. We don't want him.
Ooh,
we need Kentucky people.
No. Yeah. But, I mean, this is all something that we can carry over into next week, because there's a lot of scenarios that the Pelicans could find themselves in with the various teams. You know, they're kind of like the drunk girl at a party, and you got a bunch of co-eds that have been drinking too. Who's going to take the drunk hot chick home? That's what the Pelicans are. So that's what we're really going to look at next week. Who is going to be their dance partner?
Who will take the drunk girl home on the next podcast?
That's right. So, sorry, ladies. That might be offensive.
Well, we need to assume, though, that the Pelicans are going to draft somebody at number 51. So who's that going to be?
Anybody but Shake, and it's going to be a misunderstanding.
Yeah, you love him, don't you?
Him or Justin Jackson, honestly. Or Chick Diallo's brother, man, from Kentucky.
Man.
Yeah.
Man.
What are you talking about, man over here? I don't want to hear you.
I'm sure
you talking about something else.
I'm sure you don't want to hear me.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, Shake Milton, I guess, could be there at 51, but I don't think he's gonna fall. I mean, that's just me, like. Talking back.
Know.
I don't know, maybe like Amari Spellman, the center from Villanova.
Jalen Brunson?
Malik Newman?
Spellman College?
No, not Spellman College. Not the one that was in A Different World. No, I'm talking about...
Dang it.
There's
wow.
A center
Amari
from Villanova. A stretch five.
A stretch five?
Yes.
What
did
you
say? That's what he said.
Is that a thing?
That's a thing.
Yeah.
Oh,
with
man.
The thing.
Oh, man. You drinking two beers at one time. You just said, what is a stretch five? How far
it's
are you
a center that can shoot threes.
How far are you stretching?
Dude, 6'9". I hope he can stretch real tall.
Hello. Watch out.
Yeah,
that's
so...
Big
all
people,
right.
Big cats.
So my answer to this question, I've been banging the drum. Like, I want a guy. I feel like the Pelicans are this guy away from being a legitimate contender. Like a guy who can become like a Draymond Green, who's just going to get under the skin of the opponents. And who fits at a small forward spot. I was just looking at ESPN's rankings at number 48, which means he could very easily be available at 51, is a guy who fits that exact description, be Raleigh Alkins from Arizona. So
he's drunk. Nobody cares.
No, he fits that perfect description, at least what I think the Pelicans need, so... That's my answer.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. And like I said, we're going to probably not spend as much time on the NBA draft next week as we will on free agency, which we all expect the Pelicans to at least be really active in, if nothing else. So speaking of being really active this past weekend, the wrestlers in the WWE universe were really active. Jason, I still have not watched Money in the Bank. I know you did. I was all about the NXT TakeOver. I believe you said that you did get a chance to watch all of it. Am I right, or was I just reading things?
TakeOver, yeah, I watched all TakeOver. Oh, man. The funniest part was the missed kick that I had to rewind like two or three times.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. And that was probably the worst match. So, and that was actually my first Alistair Black match. So I don't want to, like, I don't want that to be my end-all, be-all for that. But, oh, man, that kick. I like that he does a lot of MMA into his little act.
Yeah, he does.
But,
and, like, a lot of his moves, it looked like they legitimately hurt you.
Like they ran, yeah, they look like they ran really flush. But he went for that kick and finished, and your boy just kind of just like delayed reaction and just went down like a ton of bricks. And it was fantastic. But anyways, my favorite, I don't know what yours, but my favorite was the Dream against Ricochet. And
yeah, that match was absolutely killer. Yeah, like Velveteen Dream is a star in the making. He really is. You can tell from his body language. My favorite, like the match itself, I had to rewatch it, and it just kept getting better and better and better. Which I don't think I gave it the credit whenever I first watched it as to how good it actually was until I rewatched it. But my favorite was the promo before the match began. And Ricochet was talking about how Velveteen Dream, like, he got sent home from WWE Tough Enough show, and
yeah.
Velveteen Dream said, the Dream has no memory of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He went full Roger Clemens right there. He was no, I don't, I misremember that.
Yeah, that was absolutely incredible.
There was so many over-the-top spots where it was like they truly did the whole anything you can do, I can do better. And it was the whole storytelling was great in the whole match. And, like, even the women's match that you didn't really care for, you could tell that in Shayna Baszler, she was a mediocre MMA fighter. The legit only reason she is in this right now is because she's Ronda Rousey's body. And they're building that when they build her out of NXT, you know, it'll be eventually, you know, Baszler against Rousey. But that was my first time seeing Nikki Cross wrestle. It was pretty nice to see.
She's a great wrestler, and I don't think that match really showed off her skills. Like, I was not a big fan of that match.
Yeah, I mean it wasn't my the ones I'd watch again would be the main event or the Dream Ricochet one. The tag team match I can appreciate it. I wasn't really that. I think they should have just started off the whole thing over with Dream against Ricochet and get the crowd just going straight into it.
I love the tag match. I thought the tag match was absolutely bananas. Like, that's what I want tag team matches to be. It was so great. But, like, I'm a sucker for really good tag team matches.
So Money in the Bank, it's all about Braun, because I knew Braun was, you know, you have to have that man with that briefcase, like, all day. Alexa Bliss, what she did was fantastic, okay? Then there was an Ellsworth return. Like, it was so much. It was pretty good. You had a finale of the gender Roman Reigns thing, so that's always good. You had Alexa Bliss winning Money in the Bank and then cashing it in the middle of the Rousey Nia Jax match. That was just fantastic. And then you give Braun some Money in the Bank contract, because that's the way you've taken the belt off of Lesnar. Like, you let Lesnar break CM Punk. You let him break CM Punk's record.
That's he already
great.
Did.
Yeah, so now, and technically, that's not CM Punk's record. CM Punk held the actual real title that AJ Styles holds, not the Universal title. But he broke that, so now you might as well take the title off of Lesnar now. He's going to be fighting John Jones in December anyway. He's got to, you know, he's got to go take the USADA testing. So I want Braun with that title more than anything. And then you also have a month of Rusev and AJ Styles now, if you saw that last night.
Yeah,
I
which I'm
believe
totally
Rusev
fine
got
with.
It.
I don't get the payoff between Nakamura and Styles. I thought that if you're going to do, I think it was a 4 pay-per-view events of the same match, that you're at least going to have the heel win one of them. And that should have been the big blow-off last man standing match. So I have no idea where Nakamura goes from here. I guess maybe a Jeff Hardy feud and put the U.S. title on him. But that just seems like cold boogers compared to what he was doing with AJ Styles.
I was telling everybody, I was like, it's got to be not. He's got to win this. Like, it's been too long. Like, you don't turn him heel, do all of this for nothing. And then now, it's over with. Like, that program's over with now. So now he's going into one with Jeff Hardy, which now Jeff Hardy is broken now. So eventually, you'll see all the little Brother Nero things. But I actually think that might be really good. It's just WWE's creative team. Like, the way they tell stories is just so terrible. And I think
it's
just not them. I think it's something to do with, like, the USA Network's influence. Because if you see, like, I don't understand that there's so much of a difference between NXT and the main roster, when you basically have the same creative team under contract. Like, why can't you get the good writers that are over on NXT, it seems, and put them on the main roster? Because I think it's something to do with the USA Network.
You know, I don't know if it's that or if it's just Vince McMahon's influence is just so big on the two main shows, because they're the two most watched shows, and Triple H's influence on NXT. It feels like NXT, and not only does it feel, but it looks that way too, that NXT is just far and away the superior product between Raw and SmackDown and NXT. Like, I don't give a flying dog turd about what happens on Raw or SmackDown, just because it's so hypocritical. Like, one day they'll be doing one thing, and the next week they'll be doing something that contradicts completely what they were doing the previous week. I don't get it.
You know what I really don't get that you don't see anymore really is factions. And I'm not talking about like Sanity or shit like that. I'm talking about, like, you have a Ric Flair, a Triple H, an Orton, a Batista, like something like that. Or something like, you would think, honestly, something I would think that they would do with, like, if you have, just say, Ziggler and McIntyre, and they get a small, like, just say the Revival joins them, and they'll have, like, another tag team, and you have two, because factions used to have the tag team part of the faction, used to have the main guy. You had the secondary, the guy that was secondary, you could go after the U.S. Championship or the Intercontinental. You had the manager. You had a female talent. You had all these different peoples that can go through different avenues with championships, and they were all together. You got everybody on camera at the same time. You didn't have to concentrate on making single feuds one-on-one and basically write yourself out of good content, and you can make faction against faction and have everybody on camera and still build one-on-one feuds, you know? Like, they don't do that anymore.
Yeah, I feel like there really needs to be factions, and that's one thing that I can get on my soapbox about, the fact that the tag team wrestling sucks for the most part. Like, you got some great tag teams. You got, you know, New Day, the Usos, the Revival, who's being wasted, AOP, which is being wasted, American Alpha, which really just needs to get back together. You've got all these talented guys that can really put on a show and even form factions, like you were saying, but I don't see any of that. I also think that the WWE could borrow from New Japan and start doing tournaments, because that's fun. You know, that's exciting. It's different. It's new. Like, let's do something other than the same crap that's being done.
Well, it's because they used to do King of the Ring tournaments, and it actually used to mean something. But they don't. They do these things, and then they one off of it like it doesn't matter. Like, they'll do a 50-man greatest Royal Rumble, and nobody even talks about it anymore. Like, it's just
and Braun won that too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And
so
he'll wrap
it. It's all
there, but that's about it.
Yeah, there needs to be possibly rankings. I guess SmackDown tried it, but didn't really carry on with it because it was pointless. But one thing that's going on right now, though, is the NFL is releasing, the NFL Network is releasing their top 100 players, which this is always good for a discussion, even though I don't think there's much thought put into who's placed where. But a couple of Saints were on the last episode, with Cam Jordan coming in at number 26. So, Will, Cam Jordan's my bae, and I feel like he's number one. How do you feel about 26? That's entirely too low for him, isn't it?
Yeah, so I didn't know he was your bae. That's good to know.
I'm now Jordan.
I found
Jordan
that out when he told me to blow him a kiss when I went to the camp.
Yeah.
so he's your forever,
like, that's awkward,
man.
But I'll blow him a kiss, man. It's fine, I'll do it.
He's your forever man crush?
He is. I have his jersey, so whenever I walk around, it says Jordan on my back. I had to do it. So whenever you can do something like that, you got to do it.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of talk this past season about, you know, Jordan potentially being the NFL, like, for the entire NFL, Defensive Player of the Year. I know, I can't remember who ended up winning it. I know he did not, but, you know, when you're a serious contender for that award, and then you come in as number 26 overall, that's just like a slap in the face, you know? And I know you said, now you're making me want to look it up, but, yeah, entirely too low. In my opinion, he probably should have been in the top. Huh?
Aaron Donald?
Did he? I don't think so. No, yeah, dang it. NFL Defensive Player of the Year. Let's see who. It was. No, that's wrong. That was the year before. It was Aaron Donald. Okay. There you go.
All right. Good to know. Good times. Good deal.
Yeah. But anyway, so, I mean, Cam Jordan was a legitimate contender for that award. And so for him to be the, according to NFL Network's top 100 rankings, the number 26 overall player, that's a slap in the face. It's dumb. It just doesn't make sense.
What number defensive player is he out of those 26?
I don't know. They haven't even finished the rankings.
Don't get angry until they finish the rankings, bro.
Get angry.
This is Jordan's Bay verse you're talking about. This is Jordan's Bay. Like, we got to stand up for him.
Oh, no. This is a slap in the face.
No. I got him. Oh, man.
Yeah. And then teammate Alvin Kamara came in at number 20. So I love Alvin Kamara. He's great. He's a fun guy. He's a good player. He's good at the football. But better, which I'm assuming these rankings are ranking people based on skill, but better than Cam Jordan? I don't get that. I think those two would be swapped. Could be swapped, and I would be perfectly fine with that.
So I bet Marshall Lattimore's higher than Albert Kamara.
Yeah. And Drew Brees is probably, what, like 77?
What? Yeah. He was, I think he was in like the 40s or the 30s.
Oh, that's cool. Just showing his age. You don't have to say how old he is, bro. Jeez.
He's a man.
Is he 40?
He's 40, isn't he? He's totally 40. I gotta look up Drew. I feel like less of a Saints fan because I don't know Drew Brees' age off the top of my head. He's 39.
How dare you?
Yeah.
How dare you not know that?
He's not a fan yet.
No, he's not. He's still a little whippersnapper.
He's a scuttlebutt.
Okay. Speaking of the Saints, during the press conference today, Sean Payton described the Saints during the 2006 season as the movie Rudolph and the Misfit Toys. I'm not so familiar with that. I haven't boned up on my Rudolph movies lately. But I would say that kind of fit them for the 2006 season. So much props to Sean Payton for pulling out the Rudolph, the movie references, and probably, I guess, going for the second or third movie in the catalog. But going into this season, Jason, if you could use a sports movie to describe the Saints, how would you describe them? Or which one would you choose to describe them?
For this season?
Yeah, for this season coming up.
Oh, man. I don't know. It's probably...
All right.
Probably. That's just rough. I mean, even 3 minutes before the show, you're just preparing for this. To get started for this team, I don't know if it'd just be a sports movie, unless you want to talk about something with Dennis Quaid in it, because I'm sure he's like some, washed up quarterback in some movie. But I always feel the classic, necessary roughness. You got Cam Jordan as Sinbad, okay? You got Scott Bakula as Breeze, the black hole, it's fine. You got Stonehaze, who's take you?
As Brandon Coleman, huh?
Hey, Brandon Coleman, I don't know what to just say. Think otherwise. You just can't. Just kill a little.
So, and then the coach turned real angry. All of a sudden, the defense coach. And that's not our defense coach, but we got some angry defense coach, I'm sure. But Sean Payton is like the other guy. Like John Leguizamo. It's not that big, but it's kind of like that. But he's more laid back than he could just like him until he gets something fired up his ass. And then he has a heart attack. And then we're showing things on a heart attack. So I don't know if this is going to be the same movie as this year. I'm sorry to get in my head. When is this game going to come show?
Right?
Will, what movie would you describe the Saints this coming season?
Yeah, well, as usual, I have zero idea what Jason just said. So, I might be spitting on what he said. I don't know. Probably not. But, I would describe this upcoming season with one of my favorite movies. I'm going to go with Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and let me explain. So.
Just because a guy wears a hockey jersey the whole movie doesn't make it a sports movie.
It doesn't have to be a sports movie.
Oh, man. This guy.
Yeah, so let's listen up here, okay? So we've got a season coming up that promises, or at least could be, very good. Could be incredible. Could be a beautiful spring day when no person should have to go to school, right? That's what this season potentially could be. But there's also a lot of reasons that it could fall apart and collapse. You know, Mark Ingram not playing. We don't know what we're getting from our first round pick. And the rest of the draft picks are probably going to be terrible if they even make the squad. And so we're going to have to play a few tricks. We're going to have to finagle ourselves into some weird spots. And yet at the end of all this, I think it's going to be a beautiful tapestry of Since Shout and, all the other songs that Ferris performs.
He's
and
making
then...
up words.
Have you seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
Yeah, he's sucks.
Easy scuttlebutt. Easy scuttlebutt.
No, but at the end of the day, we're going to end up back in our beds with no problems whatsoever. And it will have been the most amazing day/season that we've had, at least since 2009. So there you go.
What?
And yeah. And mine didn't make sense. And you just tried to explain Ferris Bueller to this 2018.
All right. So I'm going to say that the sports movie for me that best describes the Saints this upcoming year is Remember the Titans.
No.
So we have, hold on. Bear with
okay.
me. All okay. right. So we have a stud linebacker that's going to end up getting injured really badly during the season. That's Alex Anzalone. We have Mark Ingram, who's like the running back who keeps fumbling. He's going to be our converted cornerback. He's going to be Petey. So we have an in-battle coach who's new to the area. That's Ryan Nielsen, the defensive line coach. He's really struggling.
Hey,
just because I'm stretching doesn't mean make it any less accurate. So the whole league is going to remember who we are. We're gonna make them remember the Saints.
We're gonna
have practice. We're not going up to Gettysburg, but we're gonna run up to Vicksburg. And
it's probably gonna be like the program.
Yeah, probably so. Or it's gonna be like the longest yard. Yeah.
Wait, which one?
The one where Chris Rock killed.
Oh, wait, RIP, man. Oh, man.
Yeah. I don't know who plays Chris Rock. I don't know who plays Chris Rock in this analogy. I guess it's Delvin Bro because he's no longer with the team.
Oh, man, RIP.
So now that we've briefly touched on some sports movies, before we transition into Will's, well, Man Crush Wednesday, let's discuss, or do you want to say this for another episode, best football movie? Yeah, you want to talk about that now, or do y'all want to wait for another episode?
First off, you gotta disqualify Remember the Titans, because that's going to be number one regardless. So
over Rudy?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because Rudy was offside.
Yeah. All right, so best football movie not named Remember the Titans or Rudy.
Yeah. Any Given Sunday? That was a good one.
You're not putting
Dude, eyeball pops out.
The dude eyeball pops. Yeah, because that's going to happen. Oliver Stone.
Hey, who cares about reality?
Watching football.
I feel like what was it, the 2002 season where Jeff Blake got injured and Aaron Brooks came in? Like, that's totally Willie Beeman, isn't it? Like, and Aaron Brooks was on Willie Beeman.
Now you're calling Aaron Brooks. Now you're giving him way too much credit. I like Jamie Foxx. Jamie Foxx threw things forward.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
man. LL Cool J did remind me of Deuce McAllister, though.
Yeah.
Like, fat Deuce McAllister, like, definitely. You ever seen fat Deuce McAllister in person? Like, he gets big.
No.
I'm just saying, Deuce, you my boy. Love you. But there's a difference between he came out. Remember, he came out as a scat back. He looks now like he just ate that scat back.
Yeah,
like
he looks
came
like
out
he's
as a punt returner. Oh, man.
Yeah, he looks like he's about to, he was a power runner in the vein of like Larry Zonka and Jerome Bettis now.
Dude, what's up with these old Saints running backs? Like, I literally had to sell Dalton Hilliard a treadmill when I was 18 years old at Sears, and he will be.
Did you really?
Yes, I did.
Why Dalton Hilliard shopping at Sears?
Hey, bro. It's sales, bro.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
They had
that's
Sears
where the blue-collar people shop. Yeah.
No, it was the Sears had the Nordic Track or whatever.
Oh,
a lot of places. Other places didn't have that, bro. So he was like, he got on that. He walked like three steps. He looked at his wife. He was like, guys, I got to get this. Like, ha, thanks for that commission, player.
Hokie never really got fat. Like, Hokie always, he kind of just stayed his same weight.
All right, so he's the
exception. That's a good thing.
I think he had a disease, though, bro. I think that's why he kept from being big.
Well, later in life, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, he didn't have that disease his whole retirement, I don't think.
Yeah, but he wasn't always that big, though. But maybe it's a Cajun thing. I don't know.
Yeah, they just got special genes.
I'm just saying, like, it's weird. Old Saints running backs just get big.
I think that's kind of the thing with all running backs.
Yeah,
hey,
it's pretty
man.
Typical.
Look at LT. LT looking slim.
Yeah.
Yeah, but LT was a freaking nature.
Eddie George still looks like a extra from an Alien movie.
Yeah, well, he was never that good to begin with. I don't care.
Hey,
I'm like,
hey, ooh.
Yep. Whoa.
Yep.
Whoa.
Yep.
Damn.
No.
Yep.
No. No.
Damn, son.
No. Oh, now he likes Alex Molden. Now he's an Alex Molden lover.
What? No,
and he knows what I'm
talking
about
Alex
too.
Molden. Well, how are you bringing Alex Molden into this?
You know why I'm bringing that up. You know why I'm... You remember that draft?
Yeah.
We don't
old
pick
Eddie
Alex
George.
Stupid Molden and pick Eddie George. Then dumb Ditka doesn't trade the entire draft for Ricky Williams. And he doesn't show up on a dress. On ESG, you see the ripple effects? You see the ripple effects?
Yeah.
Yeah, don't talk about Eddie George. Eddie George was one of the last people before Ezekiel Elliott brought back the half shirt. So Eddie George was the last person to pioneer that. And now Ezekiel Elliott looks stupid doing it, but Eddie George was a G because he was bald head, looked like an extra from Alien movie. So what? Yeah.
Yeah, he just never really did it for me. I don't know what it was. I think it was because he was from Ohio State. I don't like anybody from Ohio State not named Marshawn Lattimore.
Or Michael Thomas. Or Von Bell.
Okay, yeah,
or the entire half of the Saints team that gets it from Ohio State.
And they're not Saints. I don't like them.
Oh.
There you go.
Yeah. All right, so let's go ahead and wrap this up. Will, we're going to go ahead and start with you for Man Crush Wednesday. MC Dub named the initials of one of Jason's former NBA drafts. Man Crushes.
It's still Man Crush Monday. Come on now. it's a good thing we lasted till today to do this episode, waited till today to do this episode, because I had no clue for this week. But I think I'm going to go with another Cub because I can't help it. Cubs are playing some pretty good baseball recently. And in no short or, yeah, whatever, in large part, let's put it that way, due to the contributions of Anthony Rizzo. He had an RBI in 10 straight games. That streak was snapped in the doubleheader yesterday that they had. And not just what he's done on the field, but the way that he's been vocal off the field with certain socio-political issues, we'll just say that. And has really been a role model, you know, beating cancer at a young age before he became a major league player, and just being a leader on the Cubs team. So he is a guy, like, before Dexter Fowler left and Jorge Soler left and Arrieta left, man, like, those guys were all, like, man crushes for me on the Cubs. And Rizzo was just like another, he was just a good player that I appreciated. But now that all those guys are gone, like, I am totally on Team Rizzo, and I have a man crush individually on both of them. So there you go. Anthony Rizzo is my man crush of the week.
Jason, I know you've been thinking about it. Who's your man crush?
I'm calling with the Capitals coach saying deuced out and he's going to get paid. That's my man, bro. He knows how to tap when the iron's out, player. Go ahead. What's your man crush?
All right, my man crush is a dude that I feel like I'm starting to trend here. My man crush last week was Anthony Bourdain, who passed away. This week is another guy that passed away too, Big Van Vader. He was a beast of a wrestler, one of the true big men who could do moonsaults off the top rope, and feuded with Sting in WCW, and was just a true monster. The guy had it all, and wore a glorified jockstrap on his face and got over from it. One of my favorite wrestlers. He's now going to that big promotion up in the sky, and he's going to have some incredible matches. I'm thinking his first match is going to be with the Ultimate Warrior up there. So it's time. It's time. It's Vader time. Vader, my man crush.
Yeah, buddy.
And that will wrap up this week's episode. Stay tuned. We're going to Will had a conversation discussing the World Cup with someone more knowledgeable than us two doofuses. So pay attention to that, and it's coming on after this. So we will catch y'all next week with our NBA free agency extravaganza. Who that?
And as promised, it's with Luke Stichter, who's a friend I've met online. And so here we go. And we have Luke Stichter on the line to talk a little World Cup. Luke, why don't you tell us just a little bit about your soccer background? Yeah, absolutely. I'm even curious. I'm curious about, you know, the World Cup being in Russia, but we could talk about that later if there's anything to talk about on that level. But kind of to start, you know, I haven't really followed too closely the World Cup up to this point, but it's about 7 days in, right? I think we've finished 7 days of play. And as, you know, someone who's not really a soccer fan, it seems like there's been some higher scoring games, at least early on, so far in this World Cup. So, I mean, would you consider that an accurate statement, or how would you explain that? Yeah. And that Spain Portugal game, that was the one that ended in a 3-3 tie, correct?
Yeah.
And you mentioned Russia, and I wanted to talk about that, not just from, you know, the fact the World Cup is in Russia, but I had heard, again, not with a lot of knowledge on the sports or the subject, but had heard that they weren't a great club, but they've won their first two games. I don't think they've allowed one goal, right? And so they're different. Or it's like 8-1 would be their total score for and against, right? And so I mean, is it? Do you think that's as simple as them just being the host country and kind of riding that? Adrenaline, momentum, whatever you might want to call it, or, I mean, is there something more to it than that? And that second game they played was against Egypt, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, so, again, like I said, haven't been paying a load of attention, but I was on break at work the other day when that game was going on, and isn't Egypt's best player, like, he didn't play the first game, and then he played yesterday, right?
Yeah.
And he scored on a penalty kick, is that correct? Named Salah or something like that? Is Egypt, like, are they supposed to be good? Is it just because of him? Like, how would you look at Egypt? And was that an upset, I guess, would be the question. Gotcha. So getting more to kind of the more upper echelons. Well, I guess we'd be remiss, really, to not talk about the fact that in the first week, especially the first couple of days, there were some pretty large upsets. I mean, upsets or surprises, Russia being one of them, but then Germany losing to Mexico, I know was billed as a big upset. There's another one that I had heard at least some people talk about. Can you think of what that was? Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, I guess now kind of taking that and looking forward a little bit, like, is there any real reason for concern for any of those three squads of, you know, potentially not making the next round? Gotcha. So I know that England kind of, I don't know, just from things I'd heard about the game, that it was a little scarier maybe than it should have been against Tunisia in their 2-1 win. Did you watch that game? And would you agree with that sentiment? It always helps to have those, to have at least one elite player on your team, doesn't it? Yeah, talking about Belgium, I know, again, from the little bit I've heard, that they're kind of that, like, that team that maybe is almost like an upstart that's actually really good, that could kind of surprise some people and come out and maybe, you know, at least make the Final Four, if not, you know, heck, maybe even win it all. What is it about them that makes them kind of that sexy under the radar pick? Thank you. Gotcha. So as we sit here, you know, 20th of June, yeah, just a week into the World Cup. Now that you've seen some of the action, and like you said, a couple of groups have finished two games already in the first round of play. If you had to choose, who do you think wins this World Cup?
I would say it all the time.
Gotcha. I remember I was listening to the Bill Simmons podcast when he had Rob Stone talking about the World Cup. There was someone, he had mentioned one of the teams had a really hot goalkeeper. I thought it was Spain, but it could have been France. Who has a goalkeeper that's playing really well right now? Oh yeah, I heard about that. Gotcha. Well, I'd be remiss, before we get you out of here, I'd be remiss not to bring up that I think it was last Thursday or, yeah, within the last week or so, FIFA announced that the 2026 World Cup would be coming to the Americas, Canada and Mexico included. And you mentioned how Russia was automatically granted a spot in this World Cup because of them hosting it. Would that situation come up in 2026 or because it's multiple countries hosting, would that be unique or how would that work out? Okay. Oh, wow.
Interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah, so to get you, or to wrap up, if you were to project out to 8 years, obviously with the U.S. not being in the World Cup this year, that's kind of a disappointment. I mean, would it be like a total pipe dream to say that the United States could possibly compete for a World Cup championship in 2026?
Based on this younger group of players that are bringing in experience minimum because it's all that, so they don't have to worry about necessarily playing the veterans.
Right. Right, of course, of course. Awesome, awesome. Well, yeah, I know based on those reports, some of those games might be where I am right now here in Dallas, so that'd be kind of cool. But anyway, it's been fun talking a little World Cup with you. Maybe we'll have you on again, as the World Cup progresses. And yeah, enjoy the next couple weeks. Yeah, thanks for coming on. That was Luke Stichter talking the World Cup. Thank you to him. Jason and Jordan have gone off to bed. And we're done here. If the Pelicans do make some kind of splash in tomorrow night's draft, I'm sure we'll have plenty of that, plenty to talk about on that in our NBA Pelicans off-season free agency preview show that we're going to run next week. So look forward to that. And we'll have plenty of other topics to come up here in the next couple of weeks. We're still going to run the podcast at least once a week, hopefully. Probably do more of our culture casts during the off season. But certainly the more news that happens with the Pelicans offseason, we'll talk about that, certainly, even if they're just shorter podcasts. And of course, the NFL, NFL training camps open in just a little under a month, or right about a month. And so we're not that far out from football. Of course, LSU's season starts here in Dallas, where I am, on September, I believe it's either the 2nd or the 3rd. It's whatever that Labor Day Sunday is. And I'm hoping, actually, that we can do some kind of NOLA rundown meetup, maybe get the guys to come out here or something for that LSU game against Miami at AT&T Stadium. So, but yeah, if you're listening to this and you're planning on going to that game, reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at Will Osgood 116. Jordan's at, I can't pronounce it, but it's DIABSOULE. And Jason is at Burns 24/7. So if you happen to be thinking of coming out to that game, reach out to us, let us know. We'd love to see if we can work something out where we can do some kind of NOLA rundown meetup or whatever. So I know that's still still a little ways away, but it's not too early to plan for it. So let us know. Maybe we'll have something cooking, literally and figuratively, for that. So until next time, we'll see ya. Good night.